This is a podcast from Consilio. We bring people together to create better places.
Hello and welcome to Better Places, a podcast from Consilio where we talk about all things planning, politics and development. In a break from our usual format, our Managing Director Nick Dines goes straight to our interview with Joanne Drew, Director of Housing and Regeneration at the London Borough of Enfield, and Jamie Carswell, Director of Housing and Safer Communities at the Royal Borough of Greenwich. Both serve as co-chairs of the London Housing Directors Group and offer their insights into the housing challenges facing the capital.
Well, we are delighted to be joined today by both Joanne and Jamie, and rather than me introduce themselves, I think it's best they do it themselves. Joanne, do you want to explain your role at local authority and also here at London Councils?
Okay, thanks very much, Nick, and it's great to be talking to you today. So I'm Joanne Drew, and I'm Director of Housing and Regeneration at the London Borough of Enfield, and along with Jamie, I'm co-chair of the Housing Directors Network, which is a group of officers, professional housing officers, working across 32 London boroughs and the City of London to help share good practice, promote research, and to add to the policy environment in London housing.
Brilliant. And Jamie?
Hi there. Hi. Yes, I'm Jamie Carswell. My day job is I'm Director of Housing and Safer Communities at the Royal Borough of Greenwich. I look after our housing landlord, our homelessness responsibilities, all our regulatory functions, community safety, things like that. Everything except for housing development. And I'm also with Joanne, co-chair of the London Housing Directors Network. And it's quite an exciting professional network because we're bringing together a set of leaders of housing services across London, and in the broadest sense, everything that housing touches on, to share best practice, but also think where collaboration can be a better solution than doing everything separately in 33 separate ways.
And I think collaboration across the 33 boroughs is what many people would hope is happening, because we all understand, and I guess it's taken as read, that there is a housing crisis in London. But it struck me, this does mean different things to different people, covering all spectrums of society. We have overcrowding, we've got spiralling rents, lack of family homes, mortgage payments increasing for pretty much everybody over the next couple of years, quite eye-watering extents. But what does it mean to you professionally when you hear the words housing crisis in London, Joanne?
Having been a housing professional for some decades now, as you say, the housing crisis has been prevalent and has covered issues around affordability, availability and quality. But now they are all coming together at once. And I think Jamie might talk more about how that's affecting many more people than it has done in the past. And for me, I think it's really a social justice issue at the moment. Everyone, in order to make a good contribution to society, needs the foundations of a home. And so many people do not have those foundations. And that is collectively affecting us all in terms of how successful we are as a community and society. So I think for me, it's about the social justice issues that we now face.
Jeremy, it's right. It just seemed that culmination of issues at this one point of time, everything's kind of come together, hasn't it, to create this crisis?
I think that's right. And sometimes local authorities, we look at our statutory duties, which even though we have a significant number of people that we owe a statutory duty to, it's still really the tip of the iceberg. And we look through the lens of people who are particularly vulnerable, people who we owe a duty of prevention of homelessness to, or relief of homelessness. But I think what's happened over the last maybe 2 years is that the housing crisis much more touches on people who are privately renting and people who are owner-occupying, particularly if they've got a mortgage, in a way that hasn't really been seen since sort of maybe the 1990s. And the fact that, you know, the extreme lack of availability of social rented supply, coupled with the collapse of the private rented sector in London, coupled with the squeeze on owner-occupiers with a mortgage, and that's a really important distinction, means that we're faced on it, and everyone is facing it from every angle. I think when you spoke about the housing crisis maybe 20 years ago, it was a bit niche. For some people it was acute, but other people it didn't touch them. Now everyone knows.
Indeed. It used to be a dinner dinner table topical conversation just about house prices, but now it's so much more than that, isn't it? It's literally about the affordability of living in London. It's interesting you mentioned private rental accommodation, because I think Joanne, I got in touch to you about this. It's taken us a while to get with Samantari, hasn't it? Say 6 to 9 months ago, and this report I think I saw from Enfield Council, where I live, and obviously you have your position, and it's just how reliant local authorities were on private rental accommodation to meet the housing needs of a borough. And I was generally taken aback. There's been 43% reduction in the supply of private rental properties in Enfield over the last 2 years, which has seen a reduction by 90% of private rental properties at local housing allowance rents, which then has the knock-on impact of households having to go into hotel accommodation and other short-term. I mean, this must place incredible pressure on families, of course, but also your team, Joanne, at the council, who clearly want to deliver the best outcomes for residents. Is this the most challenging set of circumstances you've seen in your career to date?
Certainly is in housing sort and homelessness, absolutely. And you might think, well, why does Enfield have such profound homelessness problems? It's a North London, outer London borough. But the reason we face these challenges is because we have not the largest private rental sector, but we do have a very high percentage of low-income households who are occupying the private rental sector because we don't have enough social housing. That is the destination. We're also the borough which has the highest number of Section 1 evictions, which is no-fault evictions that landlords can evoke. So those circumstances come together mean that people face homelessness and are not resilient to be able to respond on their own. So we, as you pointed out, we've had some very severe implications in Enfield. So we have now around 200 families in hotel accommodation, which is clearly the last thing that we want to be doing in terms of addressing homelessness. But it is the only way we can put a roof over people's heads at this time. It has significant financial challenges for councils. So this kind of shock has presented us with an in-year budget pressure in excess of 15 million, so unplanned for. It's material to the council's finances. So we may be paying for just under £1 million a month in terms of hotel accommodation costs. So as well as the financial pressures, it's clearly very challenging for staff working on the front line. We have to, we're a local authority, we have statutory duties, and we have to focus on meeting those statutory duties. So if you're not in priority need, if you are intentionally homeless, then we will not be able to help you despite some very deserving cases. And that's really challenging for staff because we're all in the housing business to help people. So it's we have responded very proactively and quickly, recognising that London perhaps these days can't meet its homelessness pressures. So we are looking to support people to find housing where LHA and rents are more aligned, which will mean looking more broadly and really putting support into residents from staff in order to help them do that. We are, you know, the opportunities that come from this situation, landlords clearly are exiting the market. We have a housing company that specialises in providing private rented accommodation. We have an ethical lettings agency which works with landlords. So now is the time when we are accelerating our acquisition programme. It won't meet the needs of everyone in our borough. It will meet the needs of some very vulnerable people who need to stay in the borough for caring or health reasons, for example. But what we will do by doing that is intervene in the market to protect as much affordable accommodation as we can. And as we see, hopefully, in 3, 4, 5 years' time, market pressures change, we may be then able to look at how we put that accommodation back into the market, having improved it, made it green, and meet new private rented standards. So many challenges, but there are opportunities to respond as well.
Great, thank you. It's just dropping the number of properties available to rent. It is impacting, it's just across the whole spectrum of London, isn't it? For those who require it on local housing allowance, to those young young professionals who are just seeing the stock disappear. I mean, we hear just from some of the staff who work at our company, it's just, you know, places are going like that. It's just cutting across all spectrums of society, isn't it, this? But Jamie, moving beyond Enfield to London as a whole, Jamie, looking at the data gathered by London councils, I think it's from 23 or so to local authorities, not everyone reported, over the last year, the number of families in B&Bs or hotels for longer than 6 weeks has risen from 64 to 591. Whilst in total the number in B&Bs has gone up from 580 to 1,550, with, just a bit shameful, this number really, isn't it? The number of children in temporary accommodation now is 63,418. I mean, what is the human impact of this you are seeing at local authority level, and also what your colleagues are reporting to you from across the capital?
Yeah, the human impact is huge, actually, and we all see the human impact play out over time. It doesn't happen straight away. Yep. It happens as the effect of people's education, the effect on people's dislocation, the effect of people sometimes in their capacity to get to work and or to be able to work and be in a position to go to work. It you know, plays out. One in every 23 children in the capital is in temporary accommodation. So that's on average. Every single primary and secondary school class
has
a child in temporary accommodation. One in 50 people are in temporary accommodation. And at the most difficult end of it, where councils are having to, because they've no alternative, place people into B&B or into hotels, you know, which really is what B&B with shared facilities really means, you know, there's no place for children to be.
Of course.
The safeguarding implications of having children in hotels need to be considered. Absolutely. We pore over them. And it's the last possible alternative that boroughs are thinking about to put people into B&B hotels. But it's that or the streets.
Yeah.
And there are, you know, obviously we have statutory obligations. So what does that mean? First of all, that's hugely financially punitive for local authorities. Local authorities are you know, sometimes being you know, reaching tipping points of their financial viability. And whereas 3 or 4 years ago you might talk about that being an issue to do with adult social care, now, especially in London and the South East, you're talking about that being a matter of temporary accommodation pressures. Secondly, it's going to be very easy to point fingers at local authorities when something goes wrong, and I'm fearful that with the best of intentions, of the best in the world, something might go wrong and children might, you know, come to harm.
Of course.
And if that does happen, I'm fearful about the blame game. I'm fearful that fingers will be pointed at the public services and particularly local authorities, say, why didn't you solve this problem? And there needs to be a far stronger and across national debate and across Whitehall that we are in a housing emergency with regards to temporary accommodation in London and the South East.
And it isn't spoken about, is it? In a way which this should be across every dinner table in the capital, should be talking about this. And it's not, it's the odd headline in the Standard, the odd seventh lead story on the BBC, and it's forgotten for a month. But this is day-to-day life for local authorities, having to manage real people with real lives.
With my with the housing policy hat on, I think there's something really interesting about what's going on in London's private rented sector. And we're really trying to understand that as London's housing directors. We've recently commissioned some research that's been done to understand are previous landlords getting out of the market, and there's some evidence they are. If they are, why is that? Is that down to the tax regime? Is that down to a regulatory regime? And raising standards, I don't think anyone can particularly complain about. Is it down to increasing buy-to-let mortgage rates? But what are the circumstances that would encourage sensible investors who are interested in long-term investment in mm-hmm. the private rented sector to be investing in something mm-hmm. that's essential for the housing, for the wider housing ecosystem to work.
Yeah.
Yes, we need a flourishing social rented sector. Yes, we need an occupation. Lots of people aspire to that. Mm-hmm. But absolutely, London needs a private rented sector that yeah. works well and effectively with high standards. Mm. And Joanne's talked about some of the interventions that local yeah. authorities are trying to do around that. But probably, you know, I think it's interesting to reflect why and what are the circumstances in which mm-hmm. more investment will come into it.
I mean, the institutional pension funds are always mentioned about, aren't they, as being ready to enter the rental markets. And Ms. Woodseema, if we're spending that amount a month on hotels, then it does seem that
absolutely
there could be a way through this if we're spending £10 million a month in quite remarkable. Joanne, sorry, you wanted to add something there?
Yeah, just there's never been a time where collaboration in this space is more needed. Yeah. And certainly we, Housing Directors Group, have been working with Children's Services and supporting yeah. the Care Leavers Covenant. Yeah. We've got a summit with health professionals looking at homelessness. Mm-hmm. And we're with the housing association sector doing some really good work to look mm-hmm. at how accommodation may come forward, as well as the charity sector. Yeah. So I think the raising awareness that we've had as part of London Council's kind of campaign on to raise awareness of homelessness has borne fruit in terms of getting mm-hmm. people to the table to look at these collaborative solutions. Yeah. But it's an emergency, and that we need to sort of act now, yeah. including in terms of additional funding for local authorities mm-hmm. to address those pressures, because otherwise you're making invidious decisions between funding services yeah. for children, for vulnerable adults, people who are homeless, all in desperate need. Mm-hmm. So we really do need that additional funding.
And the multidisciplinary challenges within a local authority isn't just housing yeah. shortages. Well, if children or in temporary accommodation, that will bring their own challenges, which then puts more budget pressure on Children's Services. It's just a sparring yeah. circle down here, isn't it? One of the things that struck me was looking into this was local housing allowance, which has been set at 2020 rates, I agree. But as we all know, living in London, rents are certainly not at 2020 mm-hmm. levels. Even though in the last 3 years, they've probably maybe even doubled if you look at what some boroughs are reporting. It's quite incredible. So the allowance for a free bed is £1,596, yet the average rent, and this was last year, so it'll be more now, is £2,000. I mean, without talking borough specific, just London wide generally, is this why we read so many local authorities in London are having to look to take the very difficult decision, I've no doubt, of placing families outside of the capital, because financially it's just not viable to house families at those local housing allowance rates in London?
I think that's true to an extent. Mm-hmm. And some boroughs are having to as a last recourse, looking at that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a house and a non-overcrowded environment out of the capital,
yep.
or a hotel in the capital, and we've just been talking about that. Mm-hmm. But it's still only 8%
right.
of all temporary accommodation yep. in London is outside the capital.
Okay.
Tends to be the bulk of it tends to be from outer London boroughs who are placing in some, you know, within 50 miles of the edge mm-hmm. of the capital.
Right.
So not sort of, you know, the sort of...
It's the stories you read.
The stories about vast yeah. numbers of people going to Bradford
yep.
or Wolverhampton or Westmead.
Yep.
That really is the exception.
Okay.
It has been known, but it's the exception. But your analysis of one of the drivers of that mm-hmm. is exactly right. The LHA levels mm-hmm. Are a real challenge. Interestingly, there's a sub-tier LHA rate mm-hmm. defined just for temporary accommodation usage.
Right.
A little nuance of the housing benefit regulations that we have to be on top of. And there it's set to 2011 levels. So that's 12 years old now.
Wow.
Funnily enough, it's hard
yes.
to find temporary accommodation that meets that level.
Wow.
And so that just drives the cost pressure where we as boroughs need
yeah.
to top up. And that's coming from the same money that would otherwise go into social care
mm-hmm.
or go into potholes or, you know,
yeah.
or whatever it is. It's coming from the council's general fund. I think we are now seeing that only 1.9% of
mm-hmm.
private rented homes in London are being let at levels less than LHA.
Right.
So it's you know, one in every 50 homes, and it's given the original conception of the LHA was it was set at the bottom third of the market. It's absolutely lost all connection to the market as a mechanism. It's not really achieving the policy objectives that it was set up to when it was part of welfare reform that the coalition government has then set up. So it's ripe, I think, for a sort of a fresh look and thinking, you know, it's you know, you want to spend public money well. We appreciate the need for that, but the relationship between LHA levels, temporary accommodation pressures and economic activity and the incentives into work, I think need a really fresh look at.
It does seem a law of unintended consequences where you're looking to save money with one hand, but on the other hand, you're then forcing local authorities to dip into general reserves and funds. So you're saving money on one side of government, but local government then has to step in.
Absolutely.
Which is how sustainable this is. I would get surprised to see when researching for this interview, but before 2000, no affordable homes were funded by Section 106 payments, which did rather surprise me, whereas today nearly half have some form of contribution from private development. And it does seem there is a slowdown in housing development for a wide number of reasons, maybe whether it's mortgage squeeze or whatever it may be. Do you think this potential slowdown in development across London is going to impact social housing delivery, given it does appear there's quite a requirement from private developers to fund social housing development through Section 106 payments? Is this a worry?
It's a huge worry, because obviously part of our remit is on the strategic housing enabling side, as well as the important role of directly delivering new homes and regenerating places. And what we're seeing through that activity is planning applications that are coming through, because many of them have stopped coming through, particularly with the requirements around secondary stair exits. Everyone is supportive of safety measures but need clarity around what those measures
it's been delaying.
So the schemes that are coming through are tending not to have social rented accommodation as part of the affordable element, but more so discount market rent, which has a place and it's very important, but it doesn't provide that security of tenure that is provided through a social housing, affordable housing unit. So we are seeing a huge shift away from that. And certainly in Enfield, our supply has been boosted over the last decade very much through our council-led schemes, whether they be in partnership or direct delivery. And they continue to provide new supply at times when the private sector is pausing. I think one of the good things about councils and their wider role in development and supply more recently is we do understand the constraints and the viability challenges on schemes, because we face them ourselves. So we're very keen to work with developers and housing associations to look at how we can get those schemes moving, and clearly working with the GLA and London councils on the supply housing delivery task force is a key route which we cross sector come together to look at the levers that can unlock supply. But just one further thing on this agenda, and planning reform particularly, obviously the infrastructure levy, we kind of got concerns around that coming in. We need to provide the infrastructure to unlock home deliveries. Yeah. Now is not the time to be asking local authorities to fund that through increased borrowing. And that would be the implications of this new system. So we would like some new thinking on that, because that would enable councils and developers together to come forward with solutions that work better for both.
I think if you take the long view, the London housing market has always had cycles, hasn't it?
Indeed,
and I think we all know that we are heading for a dip. And so the debate is, how long is that dip for? What can councils do, working with central government and with the private sector, to stimulate the market so that the dip is not a long dip? And what can we all be doing to make certain that we come back stronger? So that You know, the work is being done maybe on sites which feel stalled at the moment, so that the higher quality schemes can come back when as the market bounces back, as I think everyone knows it will. Mm-hmm. I also reflect that, you know, affordable housing delivery was once counter-cyclical because it was grant funded. It wasn't dependent on the cross subsidy either by 106 or from within, you know, or from cross subsidy within you know developers organisations. And a bit of that, mm-hmm. a bit of that counter-cyclical investment sometimes keeps construction supply chain, mm-hmm. Supply side in business.
Yep.
It minimises some of the longer term aspects of mm-hmm. of a dip. It allows, you know, the construction industry to keep going and then to bounce back more quickly. Mm-hmm. All of the positive impacts of having some form of counter-cyclical construction-led investment and an affordable housing program, and a significant affordable housing program, mm-hmm. is absolutely tried and tested tool to achieve that.
Indeed.
And that's, I suppose, you know, the case for the national policy debate and the Treasury is the benefits of affordable housing. Can be seen, you know, have significant multiplier effects in terms of the economy,
yes.
and that's before you get into, you know, reduced temporary accommodation costs.
Indeed, yeah, keeping the economy going, ready to come back strong when the dip does come back up on the upward cycle. Just final question, then one for you both here. As we said, there's a number of different reasons how we've got to this position at the moment, but it's clear that solutions are needed. If you could give a wish list to government and the mayor. What three policies would you like to see implemented? Start with you, Joanne.
So I've got two, if I can.
Well, you already gave one on the infrastructure one on the last article, so we'll count that as the first one.
I've got two more. First of all, there is money going into the system through mm-hmm. housing grant, through right to buy receipts, through the social housing decarbonisation fund mm-hmm. examples. We need to take the constraints and restrictions off those grant funded pots. We need to enable them to be used together, and we need them to come direct to local authorities so that they can apply them to get schemes unlocked and moving, because they are tackling multiple agendas, and they can work best when you're looking at regeneration schemes, for example, that are doing the same thing. So really making it easier for us to use the money that we do have in the system would be the first thing. The other thing is a bit of a shout out to housing professionals, mm-hmm. really. It's a great profession to work in. There's got something for everyone. Whether you're interested in making the lives of people better, whether you're interested in buildings and how they work, or whether you're inspired by how to make better places, or whether you want to do all of those things. So it's a really great profession, and we need to recruit and mm-hmm. retain the best quality housing staff. So now's the time to get behind the housing yep. sector, whether it's in local authorities, housing associations, the private sector, mm-hmm. and really support in responding to the serious and important challenges yep. that we have. But we really, you know, can't say what an important career route this is, and how we do need to attract those calibre people going forward.
Brilliant. And Jamie, for yourself?
With my magic wand.
With your magic wand. You have three wishes.
So, first up, I touched on the fact that the private rented sector is hugely important in London. Mm-hmm. We don't have a national strategy for the private rented sector. Mm-hmm. We have a series of different policy interventions mm-hmm. that are changing things all in different
all
ways.
All the time as well.
There's local authority licensing, there are national licensing regimes, there's a new bill that's just gone through around exempt premises and the licensing regime for those. And there are a number of, tax and other financial drivers that are affecting mm-hmm. the sector. Having a national strategy for the private rented sector, I think, would be hugely beneficial to unlock some of those interdependencies mm-hmm. and work out where are we going and what are we hoping to achieve through that. I think it's something we haven't touched on today, but is really sort of almost dovetails in with the development agenda and the investment that we're trying to make in existing stock, is around how we can reduce the carbon footprint mm-hmm. of our social housing and mm-hmm. The policy. Well, actually, social housing and in fact all housing. Mm-hmm. We've been doing some really exciting work around the London Retrofit Programme mm-hmm. In here at London Councils to think, well, what are the policy instruments that need to unlock that? And it's still a complicated world out there. There's grant funding programs. Yep. They overlap. There's a lack of clarity. Sometimes it's very stop go. It's a very short time frames for investment. The supply chain is fragmented, and there is a lot of thinking that can be done to really join up an agenda to reduce the carbon footprint of London's homes. And in truth, that's probably one of the biggest carbon reduction interventions that can be achieved in London.
Okay.
Other things in London are harder. We won't talk about transport today. the technologies are beginning to be understood, but we haven't quite worked out the financial packages to allow that to be leveraged in. And lastly, for a long time now, there's just been a gap in the number of socially rented housing being built in the capital. I think the last estimate was that London needs, on average, to reflect the backlog of people on the housing registers and new demand, London needs around 42,000 social rented homes a year. And there has absolutely been, if taken the long view over the last decade, a pickup of the of the number of homes that are being delivered, but it's so nowhere near that.
It's a drop in the ocean.
It's a drop in the ocean, I think everyone needs to reflect how that can be achieved.
Yeah, and work together to achieve it.
Absolutely.
It did strike me, and both of your kind of responses there, you know, that there are different pots of money, it's almost like it just needs that step back and a holistic approach and actually working together to deliver that. Well, thank you very much, both of you, for your time today. I hope everyone will enjoy listening to this as much as I've enjoyed hosting it. It's been absolutely enlightening with some quite terrible statistics, really. 1 in 23 children living in temporary accommodation in London. That's just not good enough, and we need to sort this out, and hopefully people listening will see this raising on the agenda. So thank you very much, both, for your time today. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Been really fun.